ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 सुवेवेन शाम शुभार्थं
Tata-chakcham
Nakriyata-hi-chit-sakyam
Nakriyata-sit-sangyam
Manasi-hyan-vastate
Manasi-hyan-vastate
Yad-vishambhachirachinam
Yad-vishambhachirachinam
Chaskandat-tapa-ishvaram
Tapa-aishvaram
Tata-chottam
Tata-chottam
Nākuryakya-ni-chit-sakyam
Nākuryasa-si-sakyam
Manasi-hyan-vastite
Manasi-hyan-vastite
Yad-vishrambhakshirachinam
Yad-vishrambhakshirachinam
Chaskandatapaishvaram
Chaskandatapaishvaram
Chita
So
Cha
And
Uktam
Is said
Na
Never
Kuryat
Should do
Kakichit At any time or with anyone.
Sakyam.
Friendship.
Manasi.
In the mind.
He.
Certainly.
Anavastite.
Which is very restless.
Yet.
In which.
Vishrambhat.
From placing too much faith.
Chirat.
For a long time.
Chinam.
Practice.
Shashkanda.
Became disturbed.
Tapaha.
The austerity.
Aishwaram.
Of great personalities like Lord Shiva and the great sage Subali.
Of great personalities like Lord Shiva.
All the learned scholars have given their opinion. The mind is by nature very restless, and one should not make friends with it. If we place full confidence in the mind, it may cheat us at any moment. Even Lord Shiva became agitated upon seeing the Mohini form of Lord Krishna. And Subali Muni also fell down from the mature stage of yogic perfection. Purport by Subali Grace, A.C. Rathbun, Swami Prabhupada. The first business of one trying to advance in spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. As Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, Mamevam so jiva loke jiva bhukta sanatanaha manaha saspanindriyani Prakriti Samintarishti. Although the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and are therefore in a transcendental position, they are still suffering in this material world and struggling for existence due to the mind and the senses. To get out of this false struggle for existence and become happy in the material world, one has to control the mind and senses and be detached from material conditions. One should never neglect austerities and penances, and one should always perform them. Lord Rishabhadev personally showed us how to do this in Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17. It is specifically stated, Makta sastra vipritrava avi tasano lavet balavan indriyo kama vidvansam vikarshati agrihasta vanaprastha sannyasi and brahmachari should be very careful when associating with women. One is forbidden to sit down in a solitary place even with one's mother, sister or daughter. In our Krishna consciousness movement, it has been very difficult to disassociate ourselves from women in our society, especially in Western countries. We are therefore sometimes criticized, but that nonetheless, we are trying to give everyone a chance to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and thus advance spiritually. If we stick to the principle of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra offenselessly, then, by the grace of Srila Haridas Thakur, we may be saved from the allurement of women. However, if we are not very strict in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we may at any time fall victim to women. So of course, when we speak of the Vedas speak in very concise language. So by saying one thing, they include all of the similar scenarios. So, you know, this verse includes all scenarios. For men, the object of sense gratification is women. So it's speaking in that traditional term. For women, the object of sense gratification is men. So that's the thing. Then there are others who are somewhere in the middle, and then varieties. So that is also, they also have the object. So, these verses, it's not a declaration of war against women. nor should anyone see women as minor, construed souls, just like the rest of the souls. This verse, quoted in the Bhagavad Gita, 15:7. All the living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, they're all spirit souls. That's how we see it. So, so all similar scenarios are included, but we're just going to, for the sake of the class, rather than going into every variation, we'll just speak in the tradition. So please, so here, of course, the main context of the instruction of all sainted persons, which is recently, actually, the context is, it's not that the objects of our sense gratification is the problem. When I mentioned I look at women, so you're the problem. It's our mind is the problem. So, therefore, we have a lot of difficulties throughout the world. The problem is within the heart. Therefore, in some countries, generally, men and women, according to this, as it says here, they try to understand that each other may see the other as objects of sense gratification. Therefore, there's some voluntary, not associating too intimately. To the point where it said that one is forbidden to sit down in a solitary place, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter. It just shows the nature of the mind. And these restrictions are there. In all religious traditions. If here what Prabhupada is pointing out is that in some circumstances, such as you find in the Western culture and you're trying to spread Krishna consciousness, some of these restrictions are not possible to institute or legislate or legalize or anything, that pre-mixing between different sexes is so much you can do. Therefore, the ultimate control where one, especially for social peace and safety, and also for spiritual advancement, the ultimate control comes back to controlling the mind, in the senses. If someone follows religious principles and they don't understand that, they place more emphasis on the women being covered up, out of sight, out of mind, having no position, not allowed to be seen on the street. That can be beaten and tortured or shot, even sometimes we're trying to get an education. Because, not understanding the nature, the day and age we're living, and it's just not possible to, in the world which has become very westernized, to fully segregate people. But in some places where they don't understand that the real principle is control of the mind, which is training from a young age, the only thing they understand is that, women should not be seen or heard like that. But that doesn't work. Because, and especially it doesn't work, it may be helpful if it goes side by side with mind, but if people are not trying to control their mind, you get an artificial sense of repression, and sometimes very difficult circumstances for women, etc. And you just have the senses just become uncontrolled anyway. So there's no benefit. You get people following really strict rules and regulations, very difficult in this world, and people still having uncontrolled sex because there's no control of the mind. So there's very little value. In fact, it can have the opposite reaction. Things can be in a worse situation. So, yes, there should be in all religions, according to their different traditions, some level of keeping. Persons who see each other as objects of sense gratification a little separate, that's helpful. it's a secondary process. It's a process that you sort of do as far as practical in this day and age until a person gets control of the mind. Ultimately, now, then we come to that point. So, as to how a person can be, how do they come to control the mind and senses? So, the Bhagavad Gita teaches that the best way, the safest way for people to come to the platform where their senses are not always disturbed is that they follow the natural rules and regulations and duties according to their natural situation. So, if a person has desires that they there must be some sex life in their life, they get married. Then, at least, it is that couple. Not that someone has sex desires and just disturbing everyone in society, you know, with their uncontrolled mind and senses, just wandering down the streets looking for people to harass, or, you know, in their office or in their workplace. You know, so there is some regulation. There's a couple, and there's some. On a very high level, so that process of marriage. So therefore marriage is very helpful for any couple. It's actually very helpful for any couple because it actually allows sex life creates a lot of disturbance when it's done irresponsibly. Because what happens is children are born. And if those children are born out of sex life and they're not wanted, well, that, you know, that's an accident. No one takes care of them and they grow up to disturb the whole world. Their life is hell and they create hell for others. So marriage is good for all couples. To regulate to some degree, at least that sex life is within. You know, it is restrained, society goes on. And that austerity, in one sense, whether they know it or not, they're actually following the Vedic process, the religious process. So a lot of people say, well, I don't believe in religion. That's okay, you may not. But if you get married, even if you don't believe in God, you're following the religious process. Because it is a main state of all religions. In fact, you know, it's one of the contentions in Christianity because actually there are evidences that Jesus was married and yet somehow that has been written out of the history. But actually it was well known that in the days of Judaism that it was almost impossible for priests to actually be practicing and not be married. They would consider that not a natural situation. And he was actually practicing, coming in the Jewish line, and he was a minister of religion. And in that day and age, it was unheard of, a minister of religion to not be married, because they understood. You know, so, you know, in all religions, it's usually been a pillar that marriage is there. So even if people get married and they don't believe in God, still actually following all the religions are teaching that a man not know it. And even if they don't know it, they still get the man. Now there's a very interesting verse in that in the doctrine. One group sent to death. Remember, a thousand pages, 700 pages, what was that one sentence? position. So, it says there that, verse 11, verse 11 of Bhagavad Gita, verse 12, the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, says, so first, you know, the best principle, fix your mind on Krishna, on God. You may call him Krishna, you may call him Allah, you may call him Jehovah, it's the same person, different name, fix your mind on God. All religions are teaching the same thing. You know, they're teaching the same thing, they're like a fire about it. So, they're all teaching the same thing. Fix your mind on God, the Supreme. This world's not your place of sense gratification to stay here, just enjoy and accept it from God. Become God and go back to God. They're all teaching the same thing, and they're all God. So, now, if you can't fix your mind on God, okay, do the next best thing. If you can't do that, do the next best thing. And it comes down to this, right? There's no real God consciousness, but if how unable you are able to work in consciousness of me, or God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, then try to act giving up the result of your work and try to be self-situated. So we see here that people, you know, they give charity to hospitals, they give charity to hungry people. Yeah, you know, they're doing some giving up. The result of their work is not known to them, or even sometimes the family. They're sacrificing all that to a higher cause. But Prabhupada says in this purport that in that respect, social service, community service, national sacrifice, sacrifice for one's country, etc. So working for the social peace of society, and read it in 1600. Maybe he said this so that someday one may come to the stage of true devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And in Bhagavad Gita 1846, it is stated that the heart of King Bhutanam, if one decides to sacrifice for the Supreme Cause, even if he does not know that the Supreme Cause is Krishna, he will come gradually to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Cause by the sacrificial method. So actually, when people get married, that's the sacrificial method. That's for a higher cause, for the peace of society, for the benefit of the children of society. Like that. There's a higher cause, not just themselves, but for everyone's benefit, this marriage is beneficial. Or, you know, other sacrificial works. By the sacrificial process, they come under the scriptures coming from the Supreme, whether they know or not, they're going to get benefit and profit, because Krishna will make that arrangement. But especially if they understand, if within knowledge they're doing things, they may not have full faith in God, but still they have faith in scriptures, for it says we do. Then it's even better, even more better. But as they pray, if you come to the point where they understand that I am doing this for the Supreme Lord, you make the fool, then you get a full transcendental result immediately. Otherwise, most of the results are still on the material plane, but it's progressed gradually to self-realization. Now, that self-realization, Prabhupada mentioned here, 1846. So we're going to whip up to that section. Part of their conversation that okay. That's it. Vita half pretty good to know me and some of the other tongues are gonna tap up your chats in community. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. So, as we started, if a person has a natural tendency in this world and somehow they perform that natural activity with some intention that is for also the benefit of a higher cause or for the Supreme. Originally they don't know what the Supreme is, but they know there's a highest Supreme cause. Either way, if they do that, they gradually attain perfection. But they, and that is the Gita's teaching of the best way to keep one's mind and senses controlled, which is the first business, according to Vishnu. As Prabhupada says, Prabhupada says in the third book, the first business of one trying to advance the spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. The best way to do that, according to Bhagavad Gita, is according to one's natural position, become properly situated, according to the, you know, if one has a tendency to live with a partner, there's a little license for sensual gratification, do that, but dedicate that, that may that please the Supreme Court. That. Now, what's very wonderful about this particular purport is that Prabhupada immediately quotes 15:7, which is the same verse quoted in this verse that we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll read how he gives us a further realization of why he's quoted this straight away in the purport to verse today, 6:3. The Prabhupada says, as stated in the 15th chapter, all living beings are fragmented parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Thus the Supreme Lord is the beginning of all living entities. This is in terms of the Vedanta Sutra. So now that's up to the heart. The Lord is therefore the beginning of life of every living entity. As stated in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord, by his two energies, his external and internal energy, is all-pervading. Therefore, one should worship the Supreme Lord with his energies. Generally, the Vaishnava devotees worship the Supreme Lord with his internal energy. His external energy is a perverted reflection of the internal energy. He is the supersoul of all demigods, all human beings, all animals, everywhere. One should therefore know that as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, one has his duty to render service unto the Supreme. Everyone should be engaged in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, that is recommended. So we get this sense from Bhagavad Gita 15:15 that if we understand, we look at every living entity and they are part of the Supreme. So therefore, every living entity should work for the benefit of the Supreme because they're part of the whole. They're not independent. So even if they don't know what the Supreme is, they should at least know, I have to work in harmony with the universe, if that's their Supreme. Or if the Supreme is their government, then I have to work, but there's nowhere that not anyone is independent. They're always a part of the family, part of the nation, part of the community, and they always have to work for the Creator cause, because they're a little part of it. No one is to complete everything. So every living entity has to work for the greater cause, for the Supreme cause. If we take it that, my family is Supreme, then we realize, well, on my family there is no government officials, and you've got the Prime Minister, then you've got demigods. As stated here, the Lord, he's the super soul in the heart of the demigods. Therefore, above them is Krishna. And that, so we get this example here that even Lord Shiva, he became agitated. So it's saying here that because we're always controlled by other Krishna's spiritual internal energy, we can come under that control and protection, or we can come under the control and harassment of the material energy. Even Shiva is in that same position. And the Lord is the super soul, even in the heart of all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. Therefore, he is supreme. Krishna is supreme. If Lord Shiva forgets his relationship with the Supreme, then he will also act, fall from his, everyone becomes fallen. As soon as we disconnect with the Supreme, we have the finger, it's part and parcel of the hand, you cut the finger off, it has no value. It becomes useless. As long as we're attached to the Supreme, we have our value. Right? Even Lord Shiva, when he became attracted to the Mahini Murthy picture of the Lord, then he fell down from the platform of Brahman and could not control the mind and senses. So, one may say, well, that's Krishna, you know. Still, Shiva's reaction was one, was a sensual reaction. Our sex desire is utilized only in the service of Krishna. In that particular case, Shiva's reaction was just a sensual desire, not necessarily in the service of Krishna. Therefore, it's a form of Krishna. Krishna is saying, if you have connection with the Supreme, your tendency, if you're performing your activities but keep in connection with the Supreme, you're satisfied because that little desire for sense gratification or affiliations we have in both, a little contamination and attractions are satisfied. And that keeps us somewhat controlled. If a person artificially represses some particular desires without getting some sort of proper, regulated, authorized satisfaction for the particular attachments, it causes chaos for that person and chaos for society. Because it builds and builds up and explodes out in an unproductive way and comes out in a way of frustration, anger. Without control. Whereas regulated sense gratification. So, you know, people die. A lot of people die. If they follow a diet that they're getting sufficient food and nutrients and not hungry, they'll keep to the diet and they'll lose weight. If they go on a starvation diet, 2-3 days later, a week later, they'll be the ice cream job. So it doesn't work. And then they're actually worse off than what they were before. And after repeated failures, no one can try anything. So, you know, that regulated process. So we see, but as soon as we hear also, we see with Lord Shiva that no one, including the demigods, is free from being controlled by the Supreme. If we get protection from the Supreme, then that control is fixed up. Therefore, here we see also Subhari Muni. Subhari Muni was a great yogi, sannyasi. The yogis are great sannyasis and yogis. I think he meditated for about 60,000 years underwater, something like that, for us in this day and age to sit quietly for 10 minutes, a day, sit in one spot, a week, we just couldn't, 60,000 years underwater. But he fell down because there was some. There's actually one fish that was like the king of the fish underwater, and he particularly paid special attention to that particular fish. He was quite fascinated, quite enchanted by it. And the fish, of course, had many wives. So this is a, you know, and with that fish, the career rate. So, but when we saw the fish, you know, mating, it didn't come back, so even after some years. And what Krishna says in the Gita is that if you try to follow the sattvic process that leads you ultimately to sannyas and renunciation, but the sattvic process in the modes of material nature is always contaminated with the other modes. That's the nature of the mode. Even after 60,000 years, the sattva, you're situated sattvically. The nature of the modes is that they will always come in at that. The only way that one can actually, so therefore in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, although he explains, one should follow the Vedas which recommend sattvic activities. That whatever activity we're doing, which is proper for our natural situation in this world, to work, raise a family, so many things, we try and do it not for greed, not for lust, not for anger,
but a little detached, silently, and for the pleasure of, and for the pleasure of the Supreme. We're having a battery break.
Properly is to have engagement for the soul on the transcendental pathway. And that engagement for the soul is realizing that because we're, as it says in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, I am part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. I'm an eternity servant, that's our ordinary entity. Unless I have that engagement, where is my spiritual position? So, we see that now. Now the interesting thing here is that, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, you're the true sannyasi and yogi. So people may think, well, what's Krishna saying? You know, Arjuna, he's a grihastha, he's a military man. What about Sabari Muni? What about Vasishtha Muni? What about Lord Shiva? They're yogis. No, Arjuna, you're the yogi, you're the sannyasi. Above them. So that's the mystery. Because people tend to think, even in Krishna consciousness, even in Vaishnava communities, was it in here, right, we read in today's purport, that this. So this makes sense, but then still, even in Vaishnava communities, even in this song, people don't get it. Prabhupada's saying that in our Krishna consciousness movement, it has been very difficult to disassociate ourselves from women in our society, especially in Western countries. We are therefore sometimes criticized. But nonetheless, we are trying to give everyone a chance to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and thus make advancement. So, Prabhupada is saying that he was criticized. Even his own godbrothers, who were Vaishnavas, who were studying Bhagavad Gita, criticized Prabhupada because they saw some, not mind the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. The ABCs, here they are the big devotees. Where was the philosophy, where was the ABC to Gita? That if someone is properly situated according to the natural position, and all their activities are dedicated in Krishna consciousness, then they're actually situated as sannyas and yogis. The best of them. Now, so, for instance, where this is, Prabhupada says this in 18, say, look at this. So many folks like Prabhupada, so many misunderstandings. Bhagavad Gita, chapter, Prabhupada says that in verse 5, acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, they must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Now, Prabhupada says, there are many purificatory processes for advancing the human being to spiritual life. The marriage ceremony, for example, is considered to be one of these sacrifices. It is called Vibhaha Jagya. So when, as we said, people get married, Vibhaha, marriage, Jagya, they're actually performing Jagya. Vibhaha Jagya, good. He said, should a sannyasi, who is in the renowned world of life, and who has given up his family relations, encourage the marriage ceremony? The Lord says here that any sacrifice which is meant for human welfare should never be given up. Vibhaha Jagya, the marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. For most men, this Vibhaha Jagya should be encouraged, even by persons in the renounced order of life. Sannyasis should never associate with women, but that does not mean that one who is in the lower stages of life, a young man, should not accept a wife in the marriage ceremony. All prescribed sacrifices are meant for achieving the Supreme Lord, therefore in the lower stages they should not be given up. Similarly. So, then in verse 7, Krishna says prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be the mode of ignorance. In the third book, Prabhupada says, a sannyasi may perform a marriage ceremony to help his disciple in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. If one renounces such activities, it is to be understood that he is acting in the mode of darkness. So here, we see, I'll just read a few more quotes before I go on. But, in verse number 9, where Krishna says, when one performs a duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association and all attachments to the food, his renunciation is said to be the mode of goodness. The Prabhupada says, one should act without attachment for the result. He should be disassociated from the modes of the work. A man in Krishna working in Krishna consciousness in a factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna, and when he gives up the result for Krishna, he is acting transcendentally. Now, in verse 11, Krishna says, it is indeed possible for an embodied being to give up all activities, but he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who is truly renounced. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that one can never give up work at any time. Therefore, one who works for Krishna and does not enjoy the fruit results, who offers everything to Krishna, is actually a renouncer. There are many members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness who work very hard in their office or in a factory or some other place, and whatever they earn they give to the society. Such highly elevated souls are actually sannyasis and are situated in the renounced order of life. It is clearly outlined here to renounce the fruits of work and for what purpose. So actually, in our society, make the mistake that we see, here's sannyasi, here's brahmacharya, everyone flocks around, they're renounced. If this person's going to work, and they're married, they live in the home, don't take any notice of them, they're just free hustlers. Actually, Prabhupada's saying here, if they are detached and disassociated from that work externally, and everything they're doing is for Krishna, they are sannyasis. In fact, Prabhupada says, Grihastha mean Paramahamsa, properly speaking. That's what we want. We want the Grihastha to be on an equal level of Paramahamsa, sannyas, with the sannyasi. Not with this. According to the level of Krishna consciousness. Men, women, it doesn't matter. Sannyasis. The external should not be taken into consideration, but their surrender to Krishna and detachment and control of mind and senses. Our control, our detachment from this world means we have full control of mind and senses. We can't say we're detached and back then, but still act in anger, jealousy, envy, lust, greed, and all the elements we're saying. Or we can't even be sannyas and act, there's some lust, there's some anger, there's some envy, there's jealousy of other vice and others. Still, Prabhupada says in the instruction, therefore, immediately become envious of a Vaishnava who's preaching Krishna consciousness, you become poor. So, this singing, even Prabhupada was even by Vaishnavas. So this is the ABC of Bhagavad Gita. This is the teachings from Bhagavatam. It's very simple. But our conditioning is we must see that saffron to think someone is advanced spiritually. So we see Subhara Muni with saffron, oh, very advanced body. We see Haridasa Kaur, born in a Muslim family. You know, what is his standing in Krishna? We may get a completely wrong impression. So, this teaching is very simple, but not always understood. And Subhari Muni, why did he fall down? Because when Garuda came and ate that big fish, Subhari was more attached to the fish than the bystander. And he saw Garuda that there was fault. Instead of looking at Garuda and thinking, his only purpose in eating is to be strong and fit in the service of the Lord, that he's seeing, oh no, he's eating that fish, I told him not to eat that fish, I'm attached to that fish, I'm sannyasi, I'm attached to that fish, so much so, that I'm going to curse Garuda and find fault in him. You know, when I'm a great yogi, sannyasi, this is a bird. The bird has eaten my fish. So if it comes down to a very, you know, materialistic view of the Vaishnava, and that offense caused him to fall down. For a long, long time. So, Prabhupada says here that, you know, if we stick to the principle of chanting Hare Krishna mantra offenselessly, then, by the grace of Srila Haridasa Kaur, we may be saved from the illusions of the world. What sense gratification, as I said? Now, all objects of sense is very well. However, if we are not very strict in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha mantra, we may at any time fall victim to women or sense gratification. So basically, as we should chant Hare Krishna congregationally, serve Krishna congregationally, and when we look at anyone, especially devotees, we should see how their devotees receive their engagement in service to the Lord through the internal spiritual energy directly. Others, they're also engaged in service to the Lord. No one can escape that. But indirectly, through the material energy, we see everyone is a servant of Krishna. This world is something like a prison. In a prison, the convicts are made to do all the work. So in this world is like that. So they're, you know, although they feel they're working for themselves, actually, as convicts, they're made to do the work to run the prison in one sense. So, when someone's really sinful in this world, they become the background. The trees, the insects, you know, someone's got to make the honey, so they can become the bee, someone's got to do that. But it's a, you know, it's a, we say, a punishment to be in those lower species of life. You know, the ants are cleaning everything up in that little garbage bin. Everything may clean and sanitize for the ants. Sometimes you see them, you know, everywhere in the toilets, there's insects, you know, constantly, you know, doing things. So they're all serving Krishna. But it's prisons. Everyone is serving Krishna, either through the material energy, but the lifestyle is serving through the spiritual energy, and they're very, very dear to Krishna. If one causes offense to them, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, those Vaishnavas who have knowledge of me as being God, and that's how they perform all their duties in that Krishna consciousness, they're always in my heart. So they're always in Krishna's heart. Very, very dear to him. And we come along and think, oh, you're just a woman, you're just a grihastha. In fact, you know, Prabhupada mentioned once that his godbrothers sometimes referred to him in a derogatory way like that. But sometimes grihasthas are seen as unclean, goochy, and that. And that's why they wear white. Because grihasthas wear white to show that they're not, that if they're properly situated, connected to Krishna, they're actually all suchi. In fact, they're more clean sometimes than others. Because, you know, you can try that yourself. You try to go through it. Children, feeding your few children, cleaning them, wearing white, and at the end of the day, the white clothes are still white. Sometimes I get some of the younger children, even the teenagers, come and help me do a fire to you. And within 5 minutes, they got black all over them. I say to them, do you know when you'll be an actual Brahmana? And so when? When you can do ceremonies with me all day, and at the end of the day, your clothes are still white. So, you know, a grihastha's way, and actually one of the main principles of grihastha is to be clean. It's a really hard thing to do. You know, you're sitting next to your children, right? Say you've got one on either side, you might have another one behind you, depending on how many children you've got. You're eating your shaman, they're eating theirs. They got it all over their hands, their arms like that, and they don't want to come up for a cuddle. Right? So it's like, you know, yeah. So within 2 seconds of being around children, you can become. So the trick is to always say, so actually, you know, grihastha means paramahamsa. Paramahamsa. Well, they do, and that's very hard. It's harder to stay clean as a grihastha than a brahmachari, but if grihastha to do it, all credit to them. And Prabhupada said, in this verse, in the Gita, he said that practically all men should, you know, get married. And Bhaktivinoda, of course, says the same thing. And Gita says pretty much the same thing. You know. Prabhupada says, there's no such thing as a bachelor in Krishna consciousness, or you know, a bachelor. You know, you might find that. You know, what are the qualities of a bachelor and a bachelorette? You know, they're not recommended. If, you know, practically everyone gets married, apart from those who, being qualified for that and don't have that propensity, don't. That's also good. That's very good. Excellent. It's a fast track. But, like I said, my Guru Maharaj trained up an army of sannyasis, brahmacharis. And then he sent them to preach, and they failed. He sent them overseas to preach, and they come back, and he took a few photos of dignitaries. Oh yes, that's the big trick in preaching, you know, get a photo, you know, put it on Facebook, and look at me with a dignitary, I'm a big preacher. But actually, nothing happens. So, if something happens, then that's good, you know. And that photo comes with some donations to the kitchen, that's okay. But it's just a photo opportunity for one's own, you know, self-aggrandizement. That's appreciated. I guess the tendency. But, Prabhupada said, I created an army of grihasthas. And they preach successfully all over the world. And he is very, very proud, therefore, of his grihasthas. And he did not look at them as something to speak of, you know, whether men or women. He just saw them as very successful preachers who did what his sannyasi godbrothers couldn't do. That was the other way of why he looked at them. Not that, oh, I've got these elevated sannyasi godbrothers, and then I've come over to the West and all I've got is these, these grihasthas. No. They did what the sannyasi godbrothers could not do. That is their elevated position. That is their connection and dedication and enthusiasm and Krishna consciousness. How dear they are to Krishna, because of their Krishna consciousness. And because of their Krishna consciousness, their minds are completely controlled and their senses are completely controlled because they're full-time, 24 hours a day, just thinking how they can spread the glory of the Holy Name of the Lord. And therefore, in the Bhagavad-gita, Krishna doesn't recommend any process which is tainted by the most mature nature, even the sattvic process followed by the jnanis and the yogis or the sannyasis. He recommends that if you want success, just take a pure devotional service. And that is recommended in the Bhagavad-gita, in the 18th chapter, and also in the 14th chapter. And I'll just finish with this final verse. But, the 14th chapter, verse 26. Bhakchayo vichadina bhakti yogin sevite sarvanam samati chaitanya brahmabhuyaya kaupte. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the most mature nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. And as we hear in Bhagavad-gita, in the 18th chapter, that platform of Brahman allows one to engage in pure devotional service. If one follows the path of pure devotional services, it will quickly bring them to the Brahman platform, and on that platform, that is the platform of performing pure devotional service. And on the platform of pure devotional service, one fully realizes Krishna and all the varieties of activities in Krishna consciousness to be transcendental, and one is guaranteed to be promoted to the spiritual world, no matter how one is situated externally in this world. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
By being properly situated in your Swadharma constitutional position, you will be able to perform appropriate or effective devotional service, Sanatana Dharma. But being properly situated in your constitutional position, that will facilitate the control of the senses that actually is the main purpose. So, that control of the senses, if, for example, we have in the different ashrams, like abstinence or indulgence in the sense gratification, but if it's not properly situated, that abstinence doesn't guarantee control of senses. If it's not properly situated, I'm just trying to understand that because we need also a training process.
For
control of their senses.
Yes, that's right. So, two things I pointed out very necessary. One should be properly situated in either brahmacharya, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. And one's livelihood as Sudra, Vaishya, Chacha, and Brahma in those categories as they sort of play out in this day and age. So one should be properly situated in that regard. But one will only be successful. So that brings one gracefully to Sattva, etc. But one can only do that if one is Krishna conscious, following the process of Krishna consciousness. Actually, in Kali Yuga, you cannot be situated as a brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas properly and be making some progress unless there's an element of Krishna consciousness. And the more Krishna consciousness is there, the more one takes advantage of that stable platform and quickly advances to the transcendental position. But if there's no sense of Krishna consciousness, still, as a Krishna consciousness movement, the Daivi Varnashram aspect indicates that we still encourage people to be properly situated in works that are not sinful, in sex life that's not sinful, etc. So we're not sort of fully recommending a complete Vedic process, but as far as what's possible to the principles, see, the Varnashram tries to achieve a purpose. So in a Krishna consciousness, you can't, in the Sankirtan movement, we can't properly establish Varnashram as it was in previous days, but we try to fulfill that purpose. That's the main thing. The purpose of Varnashram, it does regulate, especially lust, greed and anger. Of them, lust or sex desire is the one that really very difficult to control, the most powerful, and the one, when unsatisfied, turns into greed and anger. Violence. So, controlling that lust is paramount. Therefore, we may not necessarily be able to fully facilitate marriage life in all cases exactly as it was in Vedic time, but we still promote that couples should live together and their sex life should only be with that couple. It may not be the exact way you may marry. But really, and there may not be any sense of Krishna consciousness to that, but still if they do that, as we said, it's leading into the right goal, because they are following sacrifice, or sacrifice the tendency to enjoy the senses, sex life unrestrictedly, that just causes trouble. We're not for that. The Veda is not for that. Wherever that can be restricted, that's the Veda process. Even though it doesn't appear like, the part of the Varnashram, still, wherever sex life is restricted, okay, it's just a couple. If they can come to the highest level of being a couple, where they only have sex life just for children, otherwise it's not, then, but the only way they can really advance is when there's Krishna consciousness. And with Krishna consciousness, the Grihastha has come to that point where if there's no if there's no more children, then sex life just stops. Or if they're still trying to have more children, sex life is only at that time, the birth of children. And it is only by Krishna consciousness that one can practice that. But at least one is in the correct action and to practice it. If someone's supposed to be practicing control of sex life for the purpose of bringing children into this world because they do have a tendency that they need some sex life in their life, you wouldn't want to put them in the Brahmacharya ashram, because that's not good for them. It's not good for the movement. You certainly wouldn't want to put them in the sannyas ashram where they leave. That's not good for him. So, where you put them? Marriage. You practice what you need to practice in the proper ashram, not in someone else's ashram. And even if there's fault, it doesn't matter. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 18:45, he addresses that. Oh, there may be some fault. We don't see it in Krishna consciousness, everyone is doing everything right or what have you. He says this. That 48. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up
The work born of his nature, as Son of Kunti, even in such work, is full of fault. Right? Now, in the end, he says that the example of fire and smoke is very potent in this connection. When in winter time one takes a stone from the fire, sometimes smoke disturbs the eyes and other parts of the body. But still one must make use of the fire despite disturbing conditions. Similarly, one should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. So for instance, in grihastha life, perhaps they're there, ultimately, for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. There's some sex life, it may not be completely all, there may be some slip-ups from time to time. That's the smoke. So one may say, there's some slip-ups in grihastha life, finish the family life, now something else. No, there may be some smoke. Krishna's saying, still stay there, don't move. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupation, duty, Krishna consciousness. Okay? There's some slip-ups, some failures, that's okay. I'll become more determined through Krishna consciousness until I get to that. But I must be clear. There's no question of, vanaprastha or sannyas or brahmacharya. You can't go anywhere else. Oh, there's a problem here. You can only go to another ashram from grihastha if you master grihastha ashram, isn't it? So you've got to stay there, despite the smoke. That is a perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, when connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect and seeing the self within and has self-realization. Even though the faults are there, Krishna says, you do this, as I'm saying, and connect your occupation or your ashram with me, the faults in there, the smoke will clear. Just keep the Krishna consciousness going and stay in the proper ashram. So he says that. Gradually, as it says in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, we're all passing past the Krishna. That's my real identity. I'm determined to serve the Lord. By doing that, in any ashram, connecting everything with Krishna, you come to what Lord Chaitanya said. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a grihastha, vanaprastha brahmacharya. I'm not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Maintains the godliness. We come to that point. But not by saying, there's problems in my grihastha ashram. Let me just go straight to 10th canto, rasa lila, and jump up to the advanced platform. What am I doing with all this family responsibility and duties? It just causes me anxiety. And anxiety causes me to lose control of my mind and my senses. Let's jump around like a monkey and go straight to, let's start preaching from the other way of books and forget all this. Not going to work. Simply become a disturbance to oneself, the movement, and the whole world.
Okay?
You have another question?
It's regarding to the sense that there's control of the senses.
Mm.
And you mentioned about Sarvabhauma who need that because he offended Garuda and he went cursed him. And I was listening to one lecture about that because Sarvabhauma Muni quite advanced in his spiritual practice, but because of the tendency of considering he's the controller and Garuda didn't ask him permission to take the fish because he felt offended and the controller is superior than him. And that caused him to even offend the Vaishnava and as a reaction he lost control of his senses.
Certainly. That is an aspect that
Sudharmani's pride caused him to offend. Actually, Acharya's point out that there were actually a series of offences committed by Sudharmani. So there's one thing, there are several things. There are several material contaminations of consciousness, such as pride, attachment, and also, ultimately, the point that unless Krishna consciousness is there, those other material contaminations, a variety of them, which are associated with those material nature, will lead to even great sannyasi yogi like Sivarama. That's the point. But the Acharya's pointing out that there were a few different manifestations of contamination in the consciousness, such as the one you mentioned, but there are others. And he caused a series of offenses. So, yes, sometimes we hear one thing in the lecture, sometimes a little more to it. And so there's more than what we've discussed in this class and even what you've mentioned. There's a little more to that. You can look into that, very interesting. But the main point, of course, is that unless we're situated on the platform of we're trying to follow the path of pure devotional service, if we're doing that, we're fully protected. And when we are situated on pure devotional service, we're guaranteed to get back to the idea of that. No point there.
That dichotomy between control of the senses and Krishna consciousness. So to become Krishna conscious, you need to control the senses, but because to control the senses, you need to be Krishna conscious.
Well, yeah. Is the connection between control of mind and senses and Krishna consciousness, is that over the year 1587, we're part and parcel of Krishna. Our senses are eternally and naturally meant to be engaged in service to the Lord. When that's not done, our senses have lost control or fallen from their position. So control of the mind and senses is more a point of our mind and senses again being in their natural position of eternally serving Krishna, otherwise we've lost control of them, haven't we? Have been taken away from their natural blissful occupation and, you know, coming to the material world where mind and senses are doing anything else but what we naturally should be doing. It comes back to that verse 15:7. And therefore, these basic tenets of Bhagavad Gita that we just remind ourselves each day when we wake up, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. I shouldn't be doing anything else. Before we go to bed, boom, boom, boom. The brain said, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. I shouldn't be doing anything else. If we remember that, automatically, mind and senses are controlled. It's automatic. You don't even have to try separately. But if we don't have a sense that we are the eternal servant of Krishna, we have to take the slightly independent activity of trying to control the mind and senses, at least to progress to the point of sattva and realizing that I'm a spirit soul and then gradually fix up, yes, I think I am the servant of the whole, and the whole is Krishna. But, so we have to get to there, we have to control the mind and senses almost like a separate activity. But in Krishna consciousness, you say, I'm the servant of Krishna, mind and senses are there, they're controlled, peaceful, it's done automatically. So the long process without Krishna consciousness, very difficult, which can often then lead to failure, as in the case of even Shiva and Sivaramuni. But the Krishna consciousness, from the very beginning, you're properly situated, both materially and spiritually, in a natural way, materially and spiritually, and therefore it's a very safe and rapid progress. And just by being Krishna conscious, you automatically become in control of the senses automatically. But the point is, even as devotees, we should be very careful that if our mind and senses are giving us trouble, is because you're not properly applying yourself to Krishna consciousness. And we should never let that happen. That's the point. Not that someone says, well, I've been a devotee for so many years, I've done so much service, you know, now I'm very proud of my activities as a devotee, or I'm jealous, or, you know, greedy, facility. But that's okay, you know, I'm still an advanced person because I've got the saffron cloth and all, you know, I'm a sannyasi, so it doesn't matter, I've, you know, got some GBC position. No, if that's there, the Rishi Dev is saying, you're in trouble. Because even after 20, 30, 40, 50 years, if that's come back, that mind and senses getting out of your control, watch out. So you may have so many duties that you can do as a GBC, as the extended time devotee. But your first duty every day is to make sure that your Krishna consciousness is to the point where your mind and senses are controlled. In Krishna service only. And if you let that sit and you're doing so many other things, the uncontrolled mind and senses can create havoc even for the devotees if they let the Krishna consciousness sit. How do we know that our Krishna consciousness is sitting? Because I can't control my mind and senses. I'm subject to attachment, enchantment by material. I'm subject to jealous, envious, angry, like that. Okay, I think I'm a bit devotee, but I'm actually going backwards. So I know these warnings are there. And how many devotees do we see that sometimes probably, either for a short period, in a big way, or altogether? Okay? I understand.